All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today you are hearing my rapid reaction to the Falcons' 26-16 loss to the Baltimore Ravens in Week 13.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me, you love me. I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years at FalcFans.com, on Twitter at FalcFans, and of course, I'm the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today on this illustrious show, we are going to be talking about the Falcons' very disappointing loss to the Baltimore Ravens by a score of 26-16 in Week 13, their fourth straight loss, arguably their worst performance of the season. We'll touch upon that on today's episode. But let's start off with sort of the ineptitude. The first thing we'll talk about is the defense, but I do want to let you guys know that this Falcons offense was held to 131 points, their lowest since 1999. That was a performance where Chris Chandler threw for 95 yards passing in that game. The Falcons lost the time of possession battle 41 minutes to 19 minutes in that 1999 performance against the San Francisco 49ers. Today they were marginally better. They lost the time of possession battle to the Ravens today. The Ravens had possessed the ball roughly 39 and a half minutes to the Falcons 20 and a half minutes. The Ravens ran a total of 77 plays to the Falcons 45. The Ravens ran the ball 49 times, averaging 4.2 yards per carry, but that's including two kneel downs. When you take those out, the Ravens had 210 yards on 47 rushing plays, for an average of 4.5 yards per carry. You guys know, if you've been a regular listener on this podcast over this season or previous years, that I'm not a big proponent of yards per carry as a measure of rushing efficiency. I prefer success rate, but let's look at the Ravens' success rate. On those 47 runs, they had a success rate of 66%. Gus Edwards had a success rate of 71% on 21 carries. Lamar Jackson had a success rate of 60% on 15 carries, which included a couple of scrambles, but the majority of those 15 runs were designed runs off of some zone read stuff. Kenneth Dixon, Ty Montgomery got in the act, combined success rate of 64% on 11 combined carries whenever Edwards and Jackson needed a breather. The Falcons knew the run was coming in this game, couldn't stop it. In the third quarter, the Ravens ran the ball 15 times on 26 called plays from scrimmage. Nearly 60% of their offensive plays were on the ground. They were successful on 73% of those running plays. In the fourth quarter, they had 15 more runs on 18 called plays from scrimmage. You still had a success rate of 60% on those 15 runs. So for those of you guys that don't know, that aren't familiar with success rate, have, you know, relatively new to the podcast, or when I start spouting these numbers and start to tune me out and haven't heard what I've talked about previously, success rate, you want, ideally you want 45% or higher. That's 45% is good. 50% is great. 55% to 60% is amazing. Over 60% is absolute domination. That basically means you're able to do whatever you want against an opposing team. At this level of competition, you should not have a success rate, whether it's throwing the football or running this, particularly running the football, over 60% on anything. So that's basically what the Ravens were able to do. They dominated the Falcons' defense today. We saw the return of Deion Jones. Didn't really do much, didn't inspire, because it was one of the worst performances of the Falcons defense we've seen all year due to those numbers I just cited. I will say this about Deion Jones. He did make some nice tackles in this game. You know, I'll be curious to go back and look at the film and see how many of those tackles were run stops or just him, you know, tackling a guy 6-7 yards down the field and whatnot. But I thought as an individual, it was a decent return to Deion Jones. He didn't come back and pick up where he left off in that Week 1 game where he was a monster on the field or anything like that. But I certainly would argue that relative to several other players in the Falcons defense, he was one of the better guys out there on the field. At least I noticed some positive plays from him today. But you could certainly argue that the Falcons defense ran out of gas in the second half, which is one of the reasons why they got so thoroughly dominated in the second half. You know, the Ravens ran 42 plays to the Falcons 13 in the second half. But nonetheless, there's really no excuse to get dominated on the ground like that, especially when you know what's coming. They knew the Ravens were running the ball. They were running basically zone read, handing the ball up to Gus Edwards up the middle. They couldn't stop it. It was basically like watching, you know, I don't know, some bad team play against Georgia Tech, where you know the option is coming and they just run it down your throat. basically, is what happened. It felt like a college game. That's how poor the Falcons were. And it's like, it seemed like most of the stops that the Falcons did get against the Ravens offense, particularly in the first half of the game, where it seemed like they were at least competitive for the most part, were more due to Ravens errors. Lamar Jackson was not particularly accurate today, was not particularly efficient throwing the football. There were fumbles that the Ravens had. They seemed to recover a bunch of them. There were penalties that the Ravens had, all those sorts of things. You know, it seemed like the Ravens were doing their best to give the Falcons every opportunity to take this game in the first half. But then, you know, at halftime, the Falcons just basically decided they wanted to stay in at halftime. And the Ravens just came out and ran their game, didn't really have to make any adjustments. Just basically like, we're going to run the football, try to stop us. Falcons didn't stop them. So we kind of knew going into this game that if the Falcons were going to get the stops against this Ravens running game, given their offensive line, given the mobility of Lamar Jackson, as we know historically the Falcons do not do well against mobile quarterbacks, we knew the offense needed to take care of business and get off to the fast lead against one of the better defenses in the league. That didn't happen. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But I do want to plug, if you are done with this Falcons season, maybe you want to turn your attention to the NBA, where you can find a Locked On podcast devoted to all 30 NBA teams around the league, including the Locked On Hawks podcast with host Brad Rowland. Find those shows wherever you get your Locked On podcast, your NBA team every day. Now, you guys know that I am a self-proclaimed expert. Not really, of course. I get so many things wrong on this podcast. We'll talk about many of those things later on in this episode, including whether or not the Falcons will win each and every week, or any team will win each and every week. But if you have some insight into those things, then you should take advantage of that by going to MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. And that's why I always tell people to head over to MyBookie, because trust me, they're the best bet you'll make this entire season. They've been in business for years. They have great reviews online. Their mobile site is very easy to use. There's in-game live betting, over under on fantasy points scored, and the most rewarding player perks in the business. Recently, MyBookie has been slammed with new bettors and wants to help you out by giving you a $25 free play if you deposit $100 or more after 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Use the promo code LOCKEDON25 to activate that offer. Go ahead, visit MyBookie today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON25 to take advantage of that $25 free play after you deposit after 7 p.m. You play, you win, you get paid. So let's talk about the Falcons offense. You know, the Falcons were able to move the ball in their opening drive, cross midfield on that opening drive. Didn't do it again until the final possession late in the fourth quarter. Second half, they saw, you know, a couple of three and outs. They had a sack, strip, fumble, touchdown allowed for one play. As I said, we knew the Ravens had one of the better defenses in the league. They went into this game fifth in defensive DVOA. I'm sure they'll get a big boost in those rankings. They were first in yards allowed, first in points allowed, second in defensive passer rating, and they're doing all that, having all that success on defense, despite not really creating many turnovers. They went into this game tied for the second lowest amount of takeaways in the league with 8 all season long. Just as a sake of comparison, the Falcons, I think, are like 6th, with 6th lowest from the bottom, with 10 takeaways this year. So this was definitely a legit Ravens defense. And we've seen time and time again that the Falcons have not fared well against some of the more legit defenses they face. And certainly as of late, we saw Dallas put it to the Saints. So I guess that poor performance looks better in retrospect. We've seen Cleveland have a lot of success defensively. So that poor offensive performance looks better in retrospect. But again, this was still by far the worst offensive output of this team in the Matt Ryan era, not only this season. Like, you can certainly make a strong argument that this Ravens defense is the best defense we'll face this entire season, but still, nonetheless, this was the worst offensive output based off of total yards that we've seen in the Matt Ryan era. They haven't been this bad on offense since Chris Redmond back in 07, where they had less than, I think this was the only game ever under Matt Ryan where they had less than 200 yards of total offense. And I imagine there's probably only maybe one or two games where they had less than 250 yards of total offense. So to only end up with 131 is, wow, that's like John Skelton level of performances. But, you know, what was interesting is the Falcons offense tried to come out in the second half with some up-tempo stuff. But on their opening possession, they ran the ball on first down. Coleman got stuffed for a loss of two, putting them behind the chains. Ryan hit Sanu, which was Sanu's only second target all day long, setting up a third and one. And then Sanu overthrew Julio badly on a go route when they used a 12-gauge, their sort of wildcat formation. Then on the next offensive possession, the Falcons got a three-yard check down to Coleman on first down, followed by an overthrow to Jones on second down. And then Ridley ran backwards on the third and seven, trying to get yards after the catch. And you had two consecutive three and outs at a point when the game was pretty winnable. Then the Ravens proceeded to march down the field, bleeding 7 minutes off the clock, running the football, extending their lead to 9 points, 19-10 at that point. And at that point, you just knew the Falcons, given how well their offense had performed all day, really wasn't going to be able to overcome a two-score lead in this game. And to add more insult to injury, on the opening play of the next series, Matt Ryan was sack stripped. The Ravens blitzed. Alex Mack got blown up the middle. I can't remember who it was, whether it was Pierce or Williams that blew him up. He wound up tripping Ito Smith, who was trying to pick up Patrick Onwuasor, who was blitzing off the edge. Onwuasor hit Matt Ryan, stripped him. Tavon Young scooped it up and scored a touchdown. So that was it. That was the game at that point. Then the Falcons, you know, were able to score on their next drive, but it was too little, too late. And I do want to circle back and talk about the play calling, but I do want to add on to that point. I thought the Falcons' protections were pretty terrible in this game. You know, I'll certainly be eagerly anticipating watching the All-22 and really focusing on the protections, but it seemed like there was notable times where the Ravens were just able to show simple A-gap pressure and the Falcons didn't pick it up. I've been critical of Alex Mack and his issues with that, with the blitz this year. I think we talked about it on a recent Q&A. But like today's performance, at least on a couple of those plays, was very reminiscent to me of the 2015 season when there was Mike Person. I remember that 49ers game vividly, where it was like Navarro Bowman would line up in the A-gap that season and just basically go unblocked and had this monster game. I think he had like a 98 PFF grade or something ridiculous after that week or whatever. It was something like one of the highest grades of that season, simply because the Falcons refused to block him. Even when, you know, he's right next to the center and the center's, you know, sliding away from him, and it's like, what are you doing? He's right over you. Hit him. Do something. And so that was, there was a couple of instances where it seemed like that happened, particularly in the second half when I started keying on it. I'll go back and watch it in the first half, but I don't want to make it out to be like Alex Mack is the problem or anything up front, or like he's not. He's not anywhere close to being the problem. But when you can't rely, when you can't count on your more reliable and some of your most reliable players to do their jobs, and that seemed to be the case today with Alex Mack, then you're going to get what the Falcons experienced today, and then especially poor performance. And that's part of the problem, is why I'm going to give Sark a lot of grief. But I can't give him all the blame. Matt Ryan missed some throws in this game, several throws in this game. The pass protection was terrible. They couldn't run the football, which was no surprise. But, you know, I think you can certainly give Sark legitimate criticism for holding back this offense in a lot of ways, in addition to the lack of execution. But with the Falcons trying to go up tempo in the second half, his calls on first down were pretty vanilla. You know, it's putting the team behind the chains, and it's all downhill from there against this Ravens defense. And on those plays, you need to see this offense come out and do something that's going to gain, you know, if not going to get that first down so that they can go with a no huddle at that point, you got to get like 6 or 7 yards just to get something positive on that and not get gains of -2 and -3 yards in those situations. You know, the runs on second and long weren't working. To Sark's credit, they abandoned that after the first quarter, but unfortunately, when they were throwing the football in second and long, it didn't work either. When on second and seven or longer today, Ryan was 2 of 7 passing for 11 yards. Team had a success rate of 14% on those seven pass plays. You know, I know some of that was Matt Ryan missing throws. I know some of that was probably also due to poor pass protection. So I'm not completely in this, we got to fire Sark mindset, but I think to a certain extent, this is the bet the Falcons made when they hired a guy that's basically a first-time NFL assistant to coordinate their offense. And I think, you know, the hope is that with time, Sark will grow and improve with more added experience. But the problem is you have to be patient and wait however long that's going to be. And, you know, I don't know if – certainly I know this fan base doesn't have the patience, and it's going to start to be a question whether the front office and the owner's box has the patience to wait that long, and maybe even the coaching staff. So that's going to be a conversation we're going to have later this season and continue to have later this season if things don't get back on track. But it seems like, you know, any mojo that Sark had earlier this season has completely ran out. You know, this offense is basically running on fumes over the last month. You know, the 4th-and-1 call was especially egregious, where the Falcons went for it in the second quarter, at the start of the second quarter on a 4th-and-1 near midfield. You know, I understand the desire to want to run the ball in that situation, because in 2 out of the 3 short yardage situations early on the opening drive, at least, the Falcons were successful at converting the ball on the ground. But when you have Michael Pierce, when you have Brandon Williams up the middle, almost 700 pounds of bulk, like running into the teeth of that is just a bad idea. Like that's not hindsight. That's foresight. Like, don't do that. And what's the problem is, you know, on that given play, the Ravens had 10 guys in the box because the Falcons didn't really show them anything to force them to at least get the safety out of the box. You had the Falcons had 11 personnel on the field, but their receivers were Sanu, Hardy, and Hall. And I know we talked about on a previous Q&A where someone asked the question of, you know, whenever Hardy's on the field, it seems like it's tipping the hand that the Falcons are going to run it. And, you know, you look at the numbers, again, as I said then, it's 50-50 when Hardy takes the field whether the Falcons are going to run it. But on that situation, it was 100% the Ravens saw it coming. You know, have Julio out there on the field instead of Hall. And force, you know, because Hall was singled up on the outside on that given play. You had Sanu and Hardy tight to the formation, basically being blockers. But you want to present at least an alternative to Matt Ryan can be like, oh, no, it's a 10-man box, it's a 9-man box. Let's check out of this and let me throw something to Julio Jones on the outside. That's, to me, I don't have a problem with the Falcons going for it on 4th-and-1. But, you know, that to me is the right decision in that situation. And they just didn't have that opportunity. They didn't have a chance in that play. And it's just so basic. It's so vanilla. It's indefensible. And so it's one of those things, while when other people are like, they got to fire Sark, I don't really agree, but I can't really fault the sentiment whatsoever when it's stuff like that, where it should be pretty basic stuff. And, you know, I thought against Cleveland, the Falcons ran some things and Matt Ryan just missed some throws. So I wasn't too mad at Sark then. But, you know, I think today, like, we saw Matt Ryan miss that wheel route on the opening drive. And if he hits that throw, that's probably a touchdown to start the game up 7-0. And maybe the Falcons get some confidence. Maybe that puts some pressure on the Ravens. And Lamar Jackson struggles even more. And the Falcons, you know, maybe that's the domino that needs to fall in order for the Falcons to win. But if that is their margin of error, that Matt Ryan can't miss a wide open throw on the first series and that's all they got, that's a problem. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, someone asked on the recent Q&A again, like, is Sark doing a poor job adjusting? And it's like, I was hesitant to basically throw him under the bus, but like today was it's just hilarious that it's like, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to throw Sark completely under the bus like I did last year, but today was a very 2017-ish game where they just looked, you know, they had decent things on that opening drive, and then they had nothing else after that point. And again, it's not 100% Sark's fault. The Falcons didn't block well. Matt Ryan missed too many throws. Julio got little to no separation today, dropped several passes. Ridley dropped several passes, looked allergic to contact today. Sanu couldn't get open at all today. Like, the only thing that was working for the Falcons offense today was a couple of throws to Hooper. That was about it. So it's not 100% Sark's fault, but it's probably like 30 or 40% Sark's fault. And that's way too high a percentage at this point in time. You know, what do I always say? Like, people always nitpick the play calling, and it's like, you know, you get mad at 3 plays out of like 60-some-odd plays, and, you know, you do the math on that, that's like, I don't know, less than 10% of the plays. So you're like, you're only really mad at 10% of the play calling. But it's like, given the low number of plays the Falcons play, I don't even know what the percentage is today. But the point is, it's like, if it's 30% the offensive coordinator's fault, that's 20%+ way too high than it needs to be. And so that's where you get into a problem where you need your offensive coordinator to pick up the slack. And we're not getting that from from Sark right now. So we'll come back and talk a little bit about what this means for the Falcons season and talk a little bit about the draft, because I know no one's invested anymore in this 2018 season, or, you know, good luck to you if you still are. But since that is the case, I'm going to continue to plug these two podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network. The first one is the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast with hosts John Ledger and Trevor Sikkema, as well as the Draft Dudes Podcast with Kyle Krabs and Joe Marino. Find those wherever you get your Locked On Podcasts. Find those guys' written content, as well as others like Ben Solak and Brad Kelly, at thedraftnetwork.com. I'm going to continue to plug both these podcasts. If you're not subscribed to these podcasts, what are you guys doing at this point in time? Got to get geared up for this 2019 draft. Check out those two podcasts. Check out thedraftnetwork.com. Your team every day. So 4-8, the Falcons season is officially over. You know, they'll probably get a win next week against the Packers because they'll have an opportunity to activate 9 defensive backs, because now that Deion Jones has returned, they don't need to activate 6 linebackers like they did today. You know, my suggestion is deactivate Duke Riley. He's not good on special teams, so there's really no reason. We saw Foye Olukun get most of, if not all of, the snaps at weak side linebacker today instead of Duke Riley. And so if Duke Riley's not going to play defense, and I think we all can agree that he shouldn't at this point now that Deion Jones is back, and he's not been particularly good on special teams throughout his career, there's no reason to keep him active on game day. But we'll see if the Falcons do that. I personally think Bruce Carter should be that 5th linebacker active over Duke Riley, but we'll see how Dan Quinn decides to make it go. So, you know, if you don't know why I'm talking about that, it's, again, you check out the hashtag inactive analysis on Twitter. But whenever, you know, the Falcons are now 0-8 with 8 defensive backs active on game day. They had 8 defensive backs active today against the Ravens, despite having 11 defensive backs on their roster. And they're, you know, 4-0 this season with 9 defensive backs active. So we saw, you know, Keith Tandy, you know, would normally be that 9th guy active, not necessarily Bleedy Ray Wilson. And we saw an injury to Demonte Casey this week. He only missed a snap. But the Falcons look pretty thin. I think Neesman also got nicked up, too, at some point today as well, if I'm not mistaken. But, you know, the Falcons' safety depth looked pretty thin. So I'm hoping Dan Quinn learns a little bit of a lesson. Or maybe I'm not hoping, because we're in tanking season, correct? And I know some of you guys are all about, you know, now, you know, someone tweeted at me, like, I can't listen to the podcast for the rest of the season if you're not going to talk about the draft anymore, if you're not going to pivot towards the draft. So I will do that from here on out to the rest of the season, but for at least the rest of this episode, I'll give you some of my initial draft thoughts. We'll continue to talk about it. I won't get too deep into the draft and giving you definitive opinions. I'll give you thoughts. I am more than willing to give you guys my opinion, but it's still early in the process. I haven't watched all these guys leading up. I watched several of the top pass rushers this summer, and I've seen some of those guys, at least a game or two of most of them this fall. But I think, you know, so far my opinion is I think there are 3 pass rushers that are clearly heads and heels above the rest of this draft class. Their names are, of course, Nick Bosa from Ohio State, the edge rusher, brother of Joey, Ed Oliver, the defensive tackle from Houston, and Quinnen Williams, the defensive tackle from Alabama. Right now, as I'm recording this, the Falcons are slated to pick 5th in the draft. So I feel reasonably confident, at least today, and we'll see how the rest of the season goes, that the Falcons will have a pretty good shot at least one of those guys picking 5th in this draft. But again, we're a long way away from that. I do like Jeffrey Simmons, the defensive tackle from Mississippi State. I do like Raekwon Davis, Williams' teammate at Alabama, but I don't see them as top 10 picks. I think Simmons is more of a mid-first round guy, sort of in that Sheldon Rankins mold. So if you're picking 12th or 13th or something like that, then you can take Jeffrey Simmons would be happy. I know he has got an off-field situation that certainly in light of the Kareem Hunt situation is going to make that even more a bigger deal going into this offseason. So that's something to keep your eyes on. And Davis, to me, I think Davis would be a dominant 3-4 defensive end, but I think he would be miscast in a 4-3. I don't really like Davis's pass rushing ability. You know, one of the things I noticed with Alabama is they take him off the field in third downs because I don't think he's really a pass rusher. I think he's a very physical and dominant point of attack player. But to me, I think he would be miscast in our defense. So even if I did think higher of him, he wouldn't necessarily be high on my radar. I wasn't a huge fan of Cleveland Farrell, the defensive end from Clemson, entering this season. From what I understand, from what I hear, he's made significant gains this year. But going into when I did my summer watch, I didn't necessarily see him worthy of a top 50 pick from what I watched last year. You know, to me, what Cleveland Farrell reminded me of was a Tack McKinley that wasn't able to convert speed to power, which, you know, is a core element of Tack's game. You know, he's got a great first step. He's got a high motor, just like Tack does. But neither guy really bends particularly well from what I can gather. And when Tack at least has to speed to power so that he doesn't necessarily have to rely on that speed, because if you're a speed rusher that can't bend well, then you're really not going to be successful against quality offensive tackles. You're only going to be able to beat the bad offensive tackles. So another player that I would compare Cleveland Farrell to, me, at least, again, based off of what I saw this summer, is Michael Johnson, who's very talented and athletically gifted and physically gifted guy, but has never really turned into much of a great NFL pass rusher throughout his career, whether it was in Cincinnati or Tampa Bay. So those are my thoughts on Farrell entering the season. I'll definitely try to watch more of him in the coming days and weeks before we get geared up for the playoffs, with Clemson being in the playoffs. I know other people are high on Christian Wilkins. You know, I've watched a little bit more of him than I have Farrell. He does definitely look improved from where I thought he was going into the season. I didn't even think he was really a top 50 talent. I thought he was marginally a top 75 talent going into the season. So I think he's definitely improved and maybe, you know, a potential first round pick. But, you know, talking about him as a top 15 pick, I don't see that. But, you know, if he's there at the top of round two, presumably where the Falcons might be picking, and the Falcons go edge or some other position. Lord knows, please don't go another position. But if they get their D tackle at the top of round one, then, you know, I'd be at least open to the possibility of getting Christian Wilkins in round two, at least more so than I was 3 months ago. But again, it's December 3rd, at least when most of you guys are listening to it, so I don't want to get too deep into bold draft takes. And we don't even know yet if Quinnen Williams is going to even declare for this year's draft, since he's a redshirt sophomore. So at this point, we don't know anything. We don't know if the top five pick is going to hold. But at least right now, at least if you're hopeful that the Falcons are going to be in a position to take a premier pass rusher, you know, in a couple of months, today they're definitely within striking distance. So we'll see how that goes. And, you know, for me at least, I know the last time they had this high a pick and we're looking for a pass rusher, they wound up with Vic Beasley. I feel a lot better about these, you know, Bosa, Oliver, and Williams than I did about Vic Beasley entering that draft, because I think at this time, you know, 4 years ago when we were talking about Vic Beasley and taking a Falcons pass rusher, I wasn't convinced at this time that he was even the best pass rusher in this draft. So in his draft class, it was only, you know, really only after the combine where I thought Vic Beasley really separated himself from the other pass rushers at the top of the draft, purely just due to the upside with the athleticism. So again, it's a long road ahead, but I only mention Vic Beasley because he did make the one good play today. He had a nice scoop and score, the only really positive the Falcons had on either side of the ball today. So that's a positive for Vic Beasley. I don't know if he's playing his final games in Atlanta, as I've said a number of times. I am skeptical that the Falcons will cut Vic Beasley after this season. But, you know, at the very least, if it is his final days in Atlanta, at least he got something that we can remember positively him by, if we so choose. So there you have it, guys. I'm more than open to hearing your thoughts on all things. I know if you're going to sit there and send me emails and tweets telling me, you know, we should fire this coach or that coach. I don't think we've reached that point yet, but, you know, certainly if the Falcons extend this four-game losing streak into five, six, particularly six, because they got Arizona, they got Tampa Bay. Two out of the last three games are against those teams. So, like, man, they can't lose eight straight games, can they? Famous last words, right, when you're a Falcon. But if you have questions, comments, or suggestions, or differing opinions, you can send them my way. Email address is lockedonfalcons@mail.com. The name of the Facebook page, as well as the show's Twitter page, is Locked On Falcons. If you want to send it to me, I'm on Twitter at FalFans. Just let me know if it's podcast related within the tweet. And of course, you can leave a comment at FalFans.com where the show is posted daily. So until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.